if you would, Humphrey. I would like to come in and read the Word of God. Now look, if you are on your way to heaven, and I am on the way to hell, what do you think to do?
Can't do it. We'll do it live. We'll do it live. Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live. And thing sucks.
And WBAI, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. I think you guys are doing a terrific job. There's some wonderful people overnight. I think Max Schmid is brilliant and Arpo Martin is brilliant, but I don't know how many people get to hear them. And I want to say thanks. It's a tremendous job.
Well, thank you very much for that.
Curator and janitor Max Schmid. We've turned incredibly rapidly to Lost Gene Shepherd from the Heinz collection. Pair drunk ball players. That's what it says. I don't know what it means. From August 27th, why this very day in history, 1964, it's Gene Shepherd to wrap up tonight's Dustbin of History here on WBAI in New York.
Thank you. ta 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 ta. I love those fantastic Tchaikovsky endings. Would you like another ending? Fantastic. What overture was that from? I'll give you a brass figlegee with bronze oak leaf palm if you can identify the overture by the ending. There is one Tchaikovsky overture that has an ending that goes on for 26 pages. 26, no, it is not the overture to 1812. That goes for only 17 pages. That's not counting repeats, of course. Fantastic. What was that one from? I'm not kidding you. I was the great expert on endings when I was a kid. I played in the band and the orchestra, you know, and I used to learn all these endings. You know, there's nothing that feels greater when you're a bass player than to come roaring into the coda, an ending, and I just come roaring into that thing. Fantastic. What a beat. Yeah, that's real exciting, yeah. You notice nobody knows? Not a single one of them. By the way, speaking of great endings, right at this very moment, right now, one of man's creatures, one of his creations, is roaring on towards destruction. It is heading towards destruction, and in just a few hours, it's going to crash into the surface of the moon. Think about it out there. It's lonely. Really, seriously, think of this thing. It is a little piece of us. It's whistling, screaming all by itself. Nobody there to hear it, of course, the sound. Does it make a sound out in space? No. There's not enough air out there. There's not enough friction to make even a sound. It's drifting silently, just sailing on there. And of course, everybody thinks in terms of, you know, big flare of rocket. No, it's just drifting. It's coasting towards the moon. It's going about 6,000 miles an hour. It really said, and right up there in the nose of it, there's a group of television cameras aimed right at the sea of clouds. It's whistling there right this minute. Now, this sounds very hypothetical and theoretical, but it is not true. It is going right there this minute. It's doing it for us. It's giving its all for all of us. You know, of course, it's 18 billion dollars worth of radio parts. You know, as an old radio ham, I always cringe when I think of these things crashing, you know, going into the sea. I think, oh boy, those transistors, all that stuff. Oh wow. Single sideband transistor. It's sailing right into the sea of clouds. And now, of course, at Friday morning, this thing is going to start sending pictures back. Now, the reason that they're doing this, of course, is that through the biggest telescope we have, nothing can be seen or really detected that is less than a mile wide. Nothing less than a mile wide can be actually examined on the moon with the equipment we have. Now, of course, this thing is going to go right in. I mean, it's going to send back 4,000 pictures as it's going in. Oh, boy, those pictures are going to be coming back. And then, boom! Silence out there. Silence. But we'll have a roll of film that won't stop. And we hope. Oh, yeah. Now, that's just the thing. The first pictures start coming back, and it's only about 75 feet from the moon, and they get a picture of a gigantic traffic jam. Just a fantastic uproar of a traffic jam, and I can just see these two of these scientists say, well, we aren't going to park that spacecraft there. You know, they're trying to look for a place to park is what they're really doing. You know that, that's why they're sending these pictures up there. They want these pictures sent back. They're looking for a place to park the lunar spacecraft that's going to carry three guys. And if I know anything about parking in this day and age, they're going to have to send a lot more of those rockets up there to find a decent place. sailing in there. Oh, well, of course, you know everything. The machines will eventually... Somebody has been yelling, you know, why send people up to any of these planets? Just send the machines up there. They'll swing. They'll create a whole new race of machines up there on Saturn. They don't have to worry about climate, you know, that kind of stuff. They don't worry about heat or temperature or monsters that are going to eat. Man, just send a lot of machines up there that'll take care of everything, and we'll breed a new race of IBMs out there someplace. Yeah, you can produce a machine now that will reproduce itself, see. And they get up there, and those machines land on Mars and start swinging. The next thing you know, you got 142 million computers. We'll be running the whole solar system. Of course, they're getting very close to that anyway, as a matter of fact. I have a note here that just has to be reported. Oh, some ending fan. No, I'm sorry, that's not it. It is not the entrance of the gods into Valhalla. Here. Now, I want to read this thing to you. It just had to be made here. Listen to this, Don. This is getting very scary. Here's a note from Little Rock. Of course, Little Rock, it's a scary place in a lot of ways. But anyway, just Little Rock here, what's going on in Little Rock. Let's see here. Pat Raymer, 22-year-old switchboard operator and receptionist, was chosen by an IBM computer as the 1964 Miss Little Rock Business Queen. Well, the computer picked him. Now, I imagine you are interested in what kind of a chick the computer picked. Well, she's 5'10". the machines go for big ones. She's 5'10", and she is 38, 25, 37. It's a lot of lady there. Well, of course, that's a computer, you know. I can see all these little guys running this computer there. A bunch of 5'6" Tarzan types. Oh, well, everything's happening along that line. Now, you know that there is a service I've received from one of my spies in the Wall Street Journal. He says, please don't tell him my name. He said I would be working for the Village Voice immediately thereafter if they found out. But he says, you got to know this, Shepard. He says, there's a new system now. I'll read it to you. Be My Guest is the name of the latest service for busy executives who must entertain, preferably on expense accounts, of course. It's an absentee host service for the ad man who is too busy to take people out to restaurants or nightclubs personally. The harried businessman who joins the Be My Guest executive plan will receive a supply of blank cards. When the situation arises, all he needs to do is fill in the name of the person or persons or club or group to whom he wishes to play mine host. Select a restaurant from a list of over 830 in different price ranges around the world, and they'll all go and sit there, and you don't even have to see any of the slot. You know, spend your time with the out-of-town buyers. You can just entertain by proxy now. Now, the whole crowd is down there at the Copa, pinching the girls and yelling and hollering, drinking up the soup, and you're out at the ball game or out in your boat, you know. And of course, this is the part of the new inhuman world, and this is a definite improvement over the old way. I don't like people myself. Speaking of people, I'm crying out loud. Are they bringing that on again? All right. In connection with WO. No. It's just our public service piece. In connection with WORs. I can't do anything about it. In connection with WORs vast public service programming, we bring you another one of WORs taped public service broadcasts. I'm so glad to be back again, everyone. It's Mr. Chucky out here at Fire Island, and we're just having a great season out here. This is a special broadcast from my little Shay. We call it Shay Sand, Dickie and I. Shay Sand coming directly to you from Cherry Grove. And we've got so many things to tell you. Dickie, will you please shut that shower down? Dickie, you know, is a nut on showers. He's been taking showers ever since we come here. Dickie, will you please, and will you please keep Bridget out of the room while I'm broadcasting my lovely little French poodle. Dickie and Bridget take the showers together. And now let's go on now. We've got so many things to tell you this summer. We've been so excited out here. We had a group of interior decorators, and oh, it's been so wonderful out here. Well, tonight, we're going to give you a special preview of the upcoming theater season. And I don't ordinarily do this. You know, I'm a hat designer. We have so many wonderful things in the world of hats that I'd like to report to you. But we're getting so many calls and so many letters saying, please give us an advance preview on the upcoming musical season. And there's nothing I like better than a good musical. Why, Dickie and I, we never tire of singing, Maria, Maria, Maria. Dickie, will you please turn that shower down? I'm busy here. We do have to work from time to time. Yes, and one of my favorite tunes from the musical world, of course, is What Kind of Fool Am I? Why never? Oh, I just love that. But we don't have time for that sort of shilly-shallying tonight. We've got to get right to it. And I have a special note here, direct from the stages of Broadway's rehearsal halls. When Treasure Island, and I'm so excited about this upcoming production, when I'm going to try to see if I can do a little hat designing for this one. I don't like to toot my own little horn. Dickie, will you turn down that shower? We're crying out loud. And Bobby, will you please wait? We'll get the game started after the broadcast. When Treasure Island gets to the Broadway musical stage, a girl will have replaced Jim Hawkins in the central role. And now, I've always felt there was something wrong with Treasure Island, and I'm glad to see that they're bringing now it around to some real concepts of showbiz. Jim Hawkins will now be played by a girl when it enters the Broadway stage of Treasure Island. The transformation is going to be by John Fleming, adapter. He's such a nice writer. And provider of the lyrics and music by Pembroke Davenport. Oh, Pam, I know him well. And Eleanor Deming. The production was going to be set for this fall, and we can hardly wait. I don't know who will play that, but I hope it's Carol Burnett playing Jim Hawkins in Treasure Island. And we have other upcoming productions here. Moby Dick looks like it'll be on the stage around the first of the year. And we have Barbara Streisand set to play Ahab. It's a new adaptation of the book, and I think a wonderful one. That nasty old man, I never did like that book. That nasty old man walking around like that with a wooden leg. I'm glad to see that Carol Burnett and Barbara Streisand are in the running for top. And incidentally, Little Women will come on the stages this February. It's been rewritten, and the role of Amy will be played by Tab Hunter. Things are moving right along. Gulliver's Travels, incidentally, will be on the stage early this year. And in this case, the part of Gulliver will be played by wonderful Gwen Verdon. She will just leap and run around. I can just see the wonderful dance routines that you... And, oh, by the way, one more. A top dramatic production of Ben-Hur is being set for this March. And in the role of Ben-Hur himself will be Geraldine Page. And so there is our preview of the wonderful world of musicals. And by George, I have so many things to tell you, but we just don't have time. We've all got to get... We're having a wonderful party down on the beach tonight. I don't have any more time to spend with you. Goodbye, goodbye, gang. Oh, Maria, Maria. Please, Dickie, will you turn down that shower, the folks? And this is Mr. Chucky, who makes his special broadcast on WOR. Mr. Chucky, your favorite hat designer. And we'll be back just as soon as they let us. Goodbye, goodbye, boys and girls. Goodbye, gang. Why do they put this stuff? Why don't they put this stuff on John Gambling's show? Why don't they give it to somebody who really, you know, for crying out? This is, speaking of problems, this is WOR AM at FM New York. Oh, crying out. You know, I don't have enough time as it is, and they give me this. Please, you have that whoopee thing in there, please. There.
Everybody's talking Tuborg, the new filter cigarette.
Far more charcoal. Far more charcoal.
How does all that flavor?
Am I getting commercial?
Get through all that charcoal in that new filter cigarette.
Tempo. More fun than a big mouthful of charcoal.
In the structure of Tempo's all to filter. Try the new
for me, I like to chew tar. I like a nice mouth.
Tempo brings you far more activated charcoal than in previous
filters. Boy, is it active. It runs around.
The first
yellow,
bonded charcoal filter. A new kind of filter.
Yes, sir.
For a taste too good to miss.
Nothing better than a good shot of charcoal.
No health claim is made for Tempo. Only the promise of
outdoor barbecue
ball,
taste.
Smoother taste.
All I got a gang, I'll bring it up.
Da, 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 da. All that da, 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 da. In that new filter cigarette.
Rasmus.
The secret's in the fruity tune of Tempo's all new filter. Try the new filter cigarette.
Wow, wow. Got the other one in there, Donald? All ready for it? All right, bring it on. How do you keep running out of cold beer on a hot day? By yourself, four cartons and seven truckloads of Ballantine in self-open cans.
Tote home plenty, tote home plenty, tote home plenty, Ballantine beer.
That's when I'm supposed to do it now, but I'm not going to kill my own cart. Very good. Yeah, move that beer. Move those old suds, boy. You know, I suppose you realize that up in the press box in the ball games, you know, when you see Lindsey Nelson and all these guys talking about Rheingold, and you see all these guys over, Mel Allen talking about Ballantyne, you know they won't let them drink beer up there. Really? Yes, really. Well, can you imagine about the seventh inning after, you know, the ale men have been up there talking about ale, and, you know, the next thing you know, crying out loud, here comes Mickey Mantle. Hey, Mickey! Hey, Mickey! There's old Mickey Mantle down there. Hey, Mickey! Oh, Belfort, Mickey, a big slob. Hey, Phil! No, they don't want that kind of broadcast. And that's, you know, they don't. You know, they serve more orange juice and little things up there. And that's true. They don't allow them to drink. Didn't you know that? Oh, no. Oh, no, after the terrible thing that happened one time in Cincinnati, they won't let that happen. What? Well, if you don't know what happened in Cincinnati when the announcer was one of the sports announcers was selling beer, you know, I'm not going to be the first to break your innocence. A terrible story. No, I'm not going to spread that kind of stuff. But that's what killed the beer in the press boxes, I can tell you that. What happened? Well, if you don't know, that's your problem. That is your problem. I'm not kidding you, I'll tell you. No, they don't. Of course, these little incidents, I one time remember a newscaster who was sponsored by beer, and a close friend of mine, by the way, terrible story. He was sponsored by beer, and before one of his big newscasts, Don, the sponsor had a big party, one of those big cocktail parties, and they served all kinds of beer and everything else. And he was trying to make the scene there. He was the newscaster for him. He's a big man. He was a news commentator. And he was a commentator, you see. He didn't only just read the news. He was a commentator. You know, and now my commentary for tonight. This is the way I see the big new problems that are facing the world. On one hand, we have Pandit Nehru and, you know, this kind of thing. And he was very good at it, and he was a distinguished man. He had touches of C. Aubrey Smith and just a little slight undercurrent of Sidney Greenstreet running. The Japanese lanterns. It started about, I'd say, about 9, and it was just really getting great. It was really swinging. By about 11 o'clock, my friend went on at 11:30. He was the biggest commentator in the whole business, all over, you know. And about, I'd say, about quarter after 11, Don, I saw them shoving him into his car, which was being driven by a minion of the station. They were shoving him bodily into the back seat. He was fighting. You see, he was hanging out of the door jam. You know, they were trying to get him in, and his coat was ripped up the back. I don't know what he was doing in the bushes with somebody, one of those ladies with the powder, you know, with the dresses, the flowered things. And they shoved him in, and, you know, both his arms snap back. Oh, pow! He goes in. Well, the car goes off, and it had the station call letter on the side. You know, they go tearing off down to the station. Well, the sponsor, you know, was one of these guys who for over 45 years had never missed hearing one of his broadcasts. Whenever you heard his name on the air, it just was like golden bells were ringing in some fairy dell somewhere. And he just couldn't stop. So at 11:30, he takes all of his selected guests into the living room to listen to his broadcast. Well, if you've ever heard a more pie-eyed description of the world, this guy was, Pandit Nehru, Princess Margaret, Well, it was fantastic. He was pie to the gills. Now, luckily, everybody else in the room was also clanked. So all he was listening for was his own name to be said over and over again. So that was a good broadcast to the sponsor. And he was bagged. Your eyeballs were bouncing around. Well, I'm not a drinker, you know. I'm just an orange juice type and ham sandwich type, and I'm a one beer type, and I just don't drink. And I'm the only sober one in the crowd, and I'm horrified. And I'll work from our sponsor. Oh, whoopee, and a new dry container. Hello, Mac. And he went on like that. Bag to the ears, and I'm horrified. And of course, that night I go down to the station. I got to hear what happened. And of course, what happened was that there were 87 million drunks that called up and said it was the most cogent newscast they ever heard, because only a drunk can understand another drunk. I never could myself personally understand any of this guy's commentaries, which were strictly from hunger. He didn't know from nothing, you know. He had a great voice. But the night when he was bagged, he said things like, Obama, who cares about India? His commentary was, who cares about India? And that made it in every bar all over the town. Now, you don't want to hear any more of this kind of stuff. Well, I could tell you a few little choice tidbits of that kind, which maybe I had better not, but I can tell you one thing. The only time in the history of Major League Baseball, and I happen to have been present, when a drunken third baseman tried to go to his left, you don't think I'm going to tell you who. Well, all I can say is that this guy and the pitcher on the ball team, this was a Major League pair who were famous. They were, well, infamous, actually, was the word. And these two guys roomed together. Now, they didn't only room together, they drank together, they fist fought together, they chased chicks together, they did everything together. It was the wildest pair you ever heard of in Major League Baseball, and they were also very good ball players. The only thing that carried them through was their talent, sheer raw talent. And one afternoon, it was a hot afternoon, and these two guys had been out all night and most of the morning, and they had finally made it to the ballpark about 5 minutes before game time. Well, the manager, no, you're wrong. The manager was very busy with reporters and stuff. For some reason or other, he didn't see what happened. It actually, this, I know what happened later. This is because one of my buddies was a very close, in fact, he was the promotion man on the team, so he told me in secret what happened. He says, these two guys arrived and they whipped in, you know, they bribed one of the clubhouse boys or something, you know, they snuck in like that. And the next thing, you know, they're in the shower, you know, they're both in there and they're shaving like mad. They haven't shaved for 2 days, you know, both of them have been bagged somewhere. And 5 minutes later, they're out on the team, out on the field there, and the hot sun started to beat down. Now, any real drinker will tell you what hot sun will do to you. Especially when, just before, why he did it, I don't know. Just before he rushed out, he hadn't eaten, you see. That's another thing that a lot of these heavy soup men do. They don't eat, you see. And so he was suddenly fantastically hungry. So when he's running through the clubhouse, he grabbed two gigantic hot dogs, which he stuffed into his maw, right? You know, and he's running up. He's trying to get himself together. He took a shower. He's got his suit on. It's still wet. He runs out, and he's throwing the ball around, looking real great. And he gets out there on the field, and, of course, the home team is out on the field for the first thing up, you know, and it's home. They're playing at home. So the third baseman gets out there, and who's pitching? Yeah, guess who? His buddies, and he's out there warming up and trying to look very official. He looks real good. Well, I'm looking down there, and I happen to know where these two guys were because the night before I was there too. So I knew this, and you know, I couldn't figure it out because I was feeling rotten, and I left about 8 o'clock in the evening, you see, and these guys were hollering, hey, let's get the party going here, whoa! Well, incidentally, by way of a kind of an asterisk at the bottom, one of these guys appeared all over the country for at least 5 years running on the back of the Wheatie packages. And it says, yes, a clean living and Wheaties every morning does it for him. Well, I don't know whether it was Wheaties or whether it was Jack Daniels. I suspect it was Jack Daniels because the pitcher was the opposite of the infielder. The more this guy drank, the better he got. He lost all his inhibitions and he'd play with the ball out there. He'd fool around. Watch this one. Whoop. Put in there, and when he was dead dry sober, he was just another ball player. Well, now, of course, this is one of the great myths of the drunks. They always believe that they blow horns better, more musicians really. They believe that they play better when they've been drinking or when they've been whatever it is they've been doing. There's other things they do. I don't want to spoil your images of that those wonderful bands sitting up there in their green coats and their white shirts and that. But they do a lot of things, and a lot of them think they're playing good. You know, somebody's playing the Star Spangled Banner back there when the band is halfway through a String of Pearls. You know, and he thinks he's blowing great. That's the truth. Oh yeah, he's listening to me blow, man. I knew one guy who blew his horn all night, thought he was playing his best set he ever played, and didn't produce a note. Did not get a note out of his horn. Yeah, clarinet player. He was so bombed, so stoned. He's up there going like this, and his eyes are bugging, and every time his choruses would come up, he'd just stand up there and make the motions, and he thought he was hearing it. He was hearing it. Yeah, he was blowing like mad. He could hear it. Oh, wow. And he'd sit down, and he'd look around with great satisfaction, you know, and the band leader's up there. See, I'm doing the remote, and the band leader is up there, and he keeps looking back at this guy, and he'd go like that. And, of course, about halfway through his solo, somebody would get up and take over. He'd start blowing a trombone or something, you see. And all the while he sits down, he looks around with that satisfaction. Oh, man, am I cutting it tonight? Oh, boy. And of course, the only trouble is he had three eyes, all of them looking in opposite directions, one looking straight up, you know, and he's just blown away there. He didn't know. Well, I don't know what I'm telling you all this stuff for. It's only Thursday, after all. Well, the ball player, you want to get back to ball players. Well, here is this pitcher out there. And he is laying that ball in there. He's as relaxed. He's like a noodle, you know. He's just laying it in there. And the third baseman, it's okay to be relaxed when you're pitching, but when you're like a noodle at third, you're liable to get holes punched in you. I'm serious. They don't call that the hot corner for nothing, you know. So he's down there. And my friend the pitcher, you know, he lays one in there, and the first guy up strikes out. Well, I thought, well, maybe they're going to fake it through. Maybe if he can hold out this inning, that third baseman with the sun beating down on him, with the hot dogs fermenting inside of him there, if he can hold out to the third inning, maybe he can get rid of it in the dugout. And that'll work out, you see. So he's out there, and he's crunched down. So everything is now being done by pure reflex. You know what I mean, Don? He's down there. He looks good. You know, he's moving back and forth. And somebody lays down a bunt. The first guy, oh, boy, he lays down that... It's hopping him down the third baseline. He moves over there to his right and ran right past it. Just went right past it into the coaching box. The ball bounces past him and goes foul about 4 inches from the bag. And everyone says, what a fantastic play. Did you see him that play? What a play. Yeah, what a play. The one thing they didn't see, he kept running right through the coaching box and right into the dugout. You know, he couldn't stop. He gets up, he comes back out, and he's batting his glove. And one back. So he's down there, and they finally got the second guy out on a foul tip, and the third guy laces one. I'll tell you, he laces one right in the hole between short and third. Well, now this guy was famous for his ability to go to his left. Well, I never saw anything like it. He starts to go to his left with his glove down. The ball went whoop, right under his glove, but he keeps running. He kept running right out into short with his glove down. He didn't, he just kept running. Then finally he sprawls out and slides in the third. He just like a sled coming to rest. He's laying there sprawled. The left fielder picks up the ball, you know. It was a hit, you know. But what he did after the hit was wild. He just kept running out. It's like he was running on momentum. He slides in the third. The ball bounces twice. The third baseman is laying there. The left fielder picks the ball up and lobs it in, you know, to second base. He gets up, and suddenly he goes down again. All over the infield it goes. Oh, boy. The trainer comes out, you know. The trainer comes out. He rushes over, and the third baseman is getting up. You know, he's kind of wiping off the front of his uniform, and, you know, little pieces of hot dog and yesterday's pancakes and a few 18 gallons of old beer and everything else. You know, he's kind of brushing himself off, and you see this, this white suit, the white suit that the trainer wears. Well, the trainer comes over to him, and they're huddling this, and he's sort of looking down. Everyone thought, well, gee, what happened? You know, the sun or something? And suddenly, all over the front of this guy's white suit. Oh, boy, what a scene. I shouldn't be telling you this. This is a terrible scene. And luckily, there were only about 45 people out there. The club was in seventh place, so, you know, nothing was going anywhere, any place. And so the pitcher's just sort of standing out there, and his glove is hanging. You know, he's looking at his big slack jaw, and his eyes are glazed. He's just standing there watching the whole scene, you know. And, of course, what's happening is that he's seeing his friend, the third baseman, give it all up, you know, throw it all over the infield. And you can see it starting to boil inside of him, you know. I don't want to carry this on. Well, all right, I'll tell you what finally happened. They take him into the dugouts, and they're pouring water on his head, and the manager sees, of course, you can't hide it. They were smelling this guy in the mezzanine. You know, it was there. So he looks down there, and he motions to the utility infielder. He got the little wiry man who bats 148, who is always ready to go in. You know, the utility, the great glove man, who has a stick, you know, made out of pure rubber. He can't get any hits at all, but he's great on the glove. So the utility infielder runs out there, you know, starts whipping the ball around, and then they announce, going in for one another. Number 17, Charlie Spignoni. Number 17, going in for Watanabe, Charlie Spignoni. And Watanabe, which is not his name, of course, is now being escorted into the dressing room, where he will be wrung out. And he's been taken down into the dressing room. And then they announce, I am up in the press box, they announce on the press box, Watanabe, we got the report. Have you ever heard those things that they say in the background? Here's what they are. Watanabe, we just got the report from the dressing room. Watanabe was affected by the sun. Slight sunstroke down there. He'll probably be all set to play tomorrow. Tomorrow afternoon, that is. Watanabe affected by a slight sunstroke. Over. Well, I shouldn't tell you this kind of stuff. This is terrible scenes. But these moments, you know, these great moments in man's history, I think are just about over, because I think man himself is just about through. We've just about given into the, oh, by the way, Don, do you have, give me a slight hymn to the end of mankind. Just bring it on over there. That's right. Bring it on there. All together, gang. Let's salute all ex-third basemen. By the way, this third baseman now runs a very famous bar, in case you're interested, and doesn't drink a drop. Does not drink a drop, and he advises young men on how to go straight, live a clean life. Bring it up there now. Gang. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's Thursday. You know, speaking of Thursday, tomorrow night is Friday, and after that comes the Saturday night bash down at the Limelight. And for those of you, I keep getting letters. Now I must clear up something. I keep getting letters from people who keep thinking that going down to the Limelight is like one of those things we do as a special thing. It's only going to be there this week. But this is a regular broadcast down there, and if you want to come to the Limelight, it is on Sheridan Square, down in the village, and I can highly recommend it. The food is good. It's just a nice place to be, and it's difficult to describe it. People keep saying, what is it, a coffee shop, or is it a bar? I get letters from people saying, please, Mr. Shepherd, you know, the world is filled with unbelievably, I suppose you can say nervous people, not really nervous, conservative people, who have to be told. You know that one of the reasons why my show is not listed in most of the Times, you know, where it says best listings, listings of radio shows in the Times. If you notice that it's not listed, that it isn't listed in many of the papers. The reason is because the promotion department keeps calling up here, and they say, Shepherd, what are you going to talk about Wednesday? The guy over at the Times wants to know for the listings. Well, if you tell him, well, what do you mean? I'm not going to tell. You mean I'm going to tell a joke before I tell it? I'm going to tell you. Shepherd will talk about his mother's chenille bathrobe and talk about the funny thing that happened to Uncle Carl when Ant-Man threw his teeth down the air shaft, his relief teeth. And how Uncle Carl then went out and bought an Essex and took up badminton. Be sure to listen. Mr. Shepherd's surprise guest will be Gene Shepherd and Uncle Carl. Be sure to be surprised. There is an insane desire to know what is going to happen before it happens. Now, if you'll notice, in most radio listings, it'll say, Arlene Francis will interview Neville Neville, a prominent British actor and satirist and funny man. Or it'll say something like, Barry Farber interviews Barry Berry, hard-hitting, angry liberal.
You know, that kind of thing. Or it'll say, Barry Gray interviews Senator Watanabe, Senator Watson, and Charles Filippi, and Charlie M. Coleslaw. All will discuss the fate of boxing in New York. They insist on this. Believe me, if they don't know what you're going to do, forget it. If Fred Allen was around today, Fred Allen would have to tell the guys before, you know, a week ahead of time. Fred Allen will tell a funny joke about what happened in Allen's Alley the night that they ran out of coal oil. Be sure to be surprised at this one. It is a really surprising show. And, you know, you'd have to do it. You know, have you noticed in television reviews and listings, they always say, tonight's surprise guest star will be Gloria DeHaven. Every time. If there's one thing, we tried something here at WOR. Now, I'm going to tell you, I suppose I shouldn't be telling you this, but I'm going to tell you a very little inside story about television. The WOR made a purchase of great films, great European films like La Strada, all kinds of great films, Bicycle Thief, Open City, you know these great films, a couple of years ago, and I remember when it was done. They went over to Europe and they bought the rights to a lot of these great films. Now they got an idea that it would be a very interesting thing if they started a program in which it was called something like Golden Premiere or something of that nature, where they were going to show the film only once. It was going to be shown, like, say, on Wednesday night, a full year before it was scheduled to be shown on the regular run, you know, the regular million-dollar movie. These were all great films, by the way. These were great films, like Bicycle Thief and La Strada and so on. So Bob Smith here got an idea that it would be a terrific idea if they had what they called the golden premiere, something like a premiere, or sneak preview, they called it. That's right, sneak preview. That it would be exciting for television viewers to never know what the film is going to be. Just know it's going to be a great film. Sneak preview. And it was at Class A time, like 9 o'clock on a Wednesday night. Sneak preview. And they even had little cards that they were going to send out to people. Say, come to the sneak preview. You never know what it's going to be, but we can assure you it's going to be a great world film. Yes, they really were. Sneak preview. Would you believe it that the television listing people would not list it until they told them what the film was? You know that? And they had to kill the whole idea. They just would not list it. And their answer was, wow, our viewers, our readers want to know, they buy our magazine to know what the films are going to be, and you just can't do that kind of thing to our readers. Well, you see, what's happened is that the television listers and the TV guide people have become, in a way, more important than the thing they report on. Oh, yeah. Oh, let's face it. Jack O'Brien is far more important than Susskind. You know, Susskind just does shows. But this is the truth. It's gotten to the point now where... And so what we just had to do, Smitty said, he says, well, we can't do it. That's the end of it. They could not... And I thought it was a fascinating idea. It was an interesting thought, you know. And so if you turn in and on comes Bicycle Thief, you're going to be pleasantly surprised. Sure you are. Now, if you don't like it, you can always turn it off. But the whole point was it was a sneak preview, something unexpected. Absolutely, could not do it. Refuse them all. And sure. Now, I'll tell you, you know how I could get the Limelight Show listed? You know, they don't list the Limelight Show, which is, by the way, one of the only, as far as I know, it's the only live show done from a nightclub anywhere in the United States that is not an interview show. It's a real nightclub on-stage performance. It's not listed in any of the listings. Now, how could I get it listed? Well, here's the way I would get it listed. Invite a guest. And then I could write to the Times and say, my guest will be Charles Watson. Then that gets listed. Tonight's guest of Gene Shepherd at the Limelight will be Charles Watson. Totally unknown guy, you know, just completely. As long as it's a guest, it's an official radio show. As long as you have a guest, that makes your show official. If you don't have a guest, well, who's this guy? You know their attitude. I know definitely and thoroughly that the guest syndrome, of course, which is galloping, it's like a galloping fungus. That in the end, I suspect the whole world will be a guest. Have you seen now they even do this in the movies now? There'll be it's a starring Ben Johnson and Debbie Reynolds and guest star Tab Hunter. Guest star? How can you guest star in a movie? I mean, you know, do they mean that when they make it the next time, the next time they make that same movie, Tab Hunter won't be in it, he'll be off guest starring in something else. But that guest routine is really, really a fascinating syndrome of our time. The guest star. Now, getting back to the limelight, the limelight is difficult to describe, and people will write to me and will say, well, I can't come down there because you can't describe what it is. So if I says a rotten dive, then they'd come. You know? But it's a strange new kind of place. That's all I can describe it as. And it's down on Sheridan Square. You know, another thing too. Have you noticed how most radio listings, they don't know what to call me. They don't know whether I'm a humorist. They don't know whether I'm a commentator, whether I'm just a loudmouth. They don't quite know what I do, you see. And so they'll say, well, he just talks. Well, what does Lenny Bruce do? He just talks. He's standing around and talks. What does Mort Saul? He just talks. What does Bob Newhart? He just talks. But somehow, if you're doing it on the radio, nobody quite knows what to say, you see. Now, look, if you want to go to the limelight, please give them a call tonight. I don't know what they're... Lee, what's the limelight's phone number? Quick, forget that phone caller there for a minute. Just put it down now. Give me their phone number. Give them a call. And give them a call tomorrow. If you can't make it tonight, you give them a call. It's quick. It is 05-2212. Okay? Now, we're at the limelight from 10 until midnight. And I'll tell you, this, there's a strange atmosphere in the air. I feel like we better have friends down there this Saturday night. Horn blowers with very loose knees. Bring along your own ice cream cones. And make sure that your kazoo is kept in your pocket. This is not a kazoo blowing thing. But we'll never be listed, you see, never. Because I have not seen one person there wearing a fox stole yet. Not one at the limelight. Although I'm afraid that one day somebody's going to come in wearing a fox stole and forget it. We'll be listed. That's the end of it all, the whole scene. Then they'll bring the official pay. Next thing you know, it's going to be Arlene Francis and Gene Bach, and then we'll just have to close it. Official people there.
Bop. WR Radio, your station for news.
All right, we are running a bit over this evening so that we can bring you the entire Gene Shepherd from This Day in History, August 27th, 1964. And that's it. We're done. We're out of here. I'll be back Sunday night for the Golden Age of Radio, 8 to 10, here on WBAI New York. And we'll be back here next week with more of the same. More exploring tomorrow. More strange, Dr. Weird, more Inner Sanctum, and another lost Gene Shepherd episode not available anywhere but here in the dustbin of history. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back next week.
Finished with the show. What do you want me to do now?
Did you have a good time in there?
Yeah.
Oh, boy, it was fun.
Great. How'd you like to do it every day?
Yeah, yeah. That would be neat.
Hey, wait a minute. Do I still get to be the janitor?
Sure.
Oh, okay. It's a deal.
BAI, New York.